Hey guys, coming up today on Sports Spectrum, a little bonus episode for you as we listen into a conversation with our friend Scott Linebrink, who hosts the Sports Spectrum Get in the Game podcast. And Scott talks to three-time MLB All-Star Mark Teixeira. You remember Mark Teixeira, 14 years in the major leagues and, of course, a World Series championship in 2009 with the New York Yankees. He retired back in 2016. He was on the air doing some broadcast work. Now he's focused on spending time with his family and serving and giving back with his charitable efforts. One of the things I didn't know a lot about Mark Teixeira, though, was the importance of his faith in Jesus and his relationship with God being at the center of all that Mark Teixeira is about. So let's take a listen to a little bonus episode. Get in the Game podcast host Scott Linebrink talking to Mark Teixeira right here on the Sports Spectrum podcast.
I'm really excited to introduce this week's guest, Mark Teixeira, former first baseman. Mark, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Scott. Thanks for having me.
Hey, thank you. I'm excited about this conversation. You and I were talking here a little bit before we hit record, and I mentioned that our paths crossed on the other side of the field, but I didn't necessarily get to know you all that well, but now we live in the same town in Austin, Texas. So what does it feel like to be a Texan?
It's great to be back. I got to spend 8 years in the Dallas area when I signed out of Georgia Tech in 2001 and moved to the Dallas-Fort Worth area right away to be with the Rangers hitting coach Rudy Jaramillo. So got to spend between 2001 and 2009 in Dallas. And, you know, that's where my career started. And that's where, you know, my wife and I started our journey together and started having kids. And so Texas is a huge part of my life. And getting, you know, being able to move back here a little over 2 years ago now to the great state of Texas has just been awesome. It's been a great blessing for me and my family. And we're just happy to be back.
Well, and as we sit here in the first part of September, the mercury often goes over 100 degrees. So to say that you really love to be in Texas at this time of year, it says something.
Well, there's a few things that I have response with that is that, you know, have you ever had a 5 month winter in Connecticut? Because that's how long winter is where I came from. I lived in Greenwich, Connecticut for 12 years and beautiful summers, but man, the golf season's short and the winters are long. And so, you know, I'll give you an example. Yesterday it probably reached 105 degrees. I got up in the morning at 6:30, went and played golf with my youngest son. We were off the course by 11. And then I went out in the boat in the afternoon and, you know, spent Labor Day afternoon, you know, on Lake Travis with another family and just had a blast. So, you know, the heat is one thing. And I used to play double headers in this. You know, that's the funny thing is, you know, I guess I'm a warm weather person, Scott.
And now they have a roof with air conditioning. I mean, golly, the guys have gotten soft.
And that's for the fans, you know. And I totally get that because when it was September, early September, and football season started, you know, people, you know, look at their calendars like, well, I know Friday night I'm going to the high school game. I know Saturday's college football day and Sunday's NFL day. I don't have time to go to the Rangers game because I don't want to sit in that heat anyway. And so I think for the fans, it's been awesome to have that dome in Dallas.
Yeah. Mark, you played for the Rangers and the Yankees most of your career, but you did have stops in Atlanta and Anaheim. You're one of the most prolific switch hitters, a three-time All-Star. I think you're one of only five switch hitters with 400 home runs. I think that's right. But, I mean, when you think of switch hitters, you think of guys like Eddie Matthews, Eddie Murray, Mickey Mantle, Chipper Jones. Like, you're right up there with those guys. Five-time Gold Glove Award winner, three-time Silver Slug Award winner. So, I mean, you're a guy that did it both at the plate and in the field. You won a World Series with the Yankees back in 2009. Man, what was that like, just a 14-year career? When you think about, like, you know, what sticks out in your mind, what is that?
First of all, I'm extremely blessed that God gave me the ability to hit a baseball, because when it all boils down, if I didn't have that God-given talent, you know, the eye-hand coordination, the natural strength, obviously I worked hard at it, and, you know, and I made sacrifices, but that's, you know, that's the number one thing that I tell everybody about my career is that my career was because God gave me the ability to hit a baseball. And now what I did with that was hard work and dedication, but it was quite a ride, and it was really who I was for a large portion of my life. I mean, I wanted to be a Major League Baseball player from the time I was 5 years old. And a lot of kids say that, and then by the time they're in high school, they stop playing baseball, or maybe they play in college. Very few actually get to play professionally. And you know what it takes to stay there for 14 years. So I'm just extremely blessed with health and the ability to play baseball.
You know, one of the things I remember about you, Mark, and most of my outings, I think, were against you when you were with Texas. But I just remember you being so intensely focused. I remember, just you being a guy that, like, you hated to miss a pitch. I just felt like, you didn't give away any at bats. And now that I know you a little bit more off the field, and I know that you're a strong man of faith, and you've got kind of a creative side, a side that likes to joke around. But man, I did not see that on the field. Can you talk about your approach and what worked for you and made you successful?
Yeah, it's funny you bring that up, because I absolutely was laser focused on the field. And I think there's a few reasons. Number one, it was my job. That's, I had a job. I had a responsibility to my team, my teammates, ownership, my manager, everybody up and down the line, to the fans, to give it every single thing I had. And so, joking around on the field, not caring if we won or we lost, dancing around after a single, in the eighth inning when we're down by five runs, those are just things that I never did, loafing to first base, watching home runs that don't actually go out, so you only get a single because the ball hit the wall, you should have been on second base. Like, those are things that I see nowadays in the game. And I just, that was never that thought never crossed my mind, because I respected the game so much. I felt privileged to be able to put on a uniform every single day. So absolutely, I was going to take my job very seriously and be extremely focused. That was kind of the one side. The other side of it was, I wasn't that good that I could get away with being, a quarter of the way there, or half the way there, even 90% there. I had to be 100% there. We've played with plenty of talented ball players that can show up and get two hits, or that can not read a scouting report, not do their workouts in between starts, but still go out there and pitch a great game just because they were so insanely talented. I wasn't one of those guys. I had to grind. I had to lock it in. And while I probably looked like I was not having fun playing baseball, maybe because I was so intense. After the game, when I got three hits and hit a home run and we won, man, I had a huge smile on my face. That's the time to celebrate. After the game, after that last out, and you can appreciate the work that you did that day.
Yeah. Can you think about, like, I mean, I know as we go back over our careers, we think about, different moments in time. Maybe there's a highlight reel that kind of plays through. Maybe it's some really silly stuff that happened on the field that we just remember pop into our minds. I know our listeners always love a good story. Can you give us a good story that you remember from your playing career?
I would say there were two times in my career that I call it an out-of-body experience, because I could almost see myself doing it and really appreciate it. There were two home runs I hit. One was in the All-Star game in 2005. I hit a home run off Dontrell Willis. And the other one was a home run I hit off Pedro Martinez in the 2009 World Series, in game two of the World Series. And both of those times, I'm running around the bases, and I said to myself, I can't believe I just hit a home run in the All-Star game, or I can't believe I just hit a home run in the World Series, because I grew up a fan. I watched when I was a kid, I watched every All-Star game. I watched as many World Series games as I could. And saying it was an out-of-body experience, those small little moments, those short moments of my career, two at-bats out of, a couple thousand, I'm not sure how many at-bats I had, but out of thousands of at-bats, I could appreciate what had just occurred. And I didn't even really feel myself running around the bases. I kind of like floated around the bases, and I wanted to make sure, like, after it was all said and done, I went and, like, looked up at the scoreboard, like, did that actually happen? Because because I kind of blacked out here for a second. So I thought that was I thought those were two funny times in my career.
That's a cool perspective. I appreciate that. And just your perspective as a fan first and a player second. Mark, I want to ask you about a couple of midseason trades, and this is going to lead into kind of another question that I want to ask you. But you had two back-to-back. So you had a pretty long career in Texas, 5-6 years, and then you got traded, and you went to Atlanta, and you played there for less than a year, and then you got traded to Anaheim before landing with the Yankees for multiple years. But talk about the transition and the stress on the family that you have to go through, and how did you navigate those two midseason trades back-to-back years?
So I was really lucky that my kids were young when I got traded. So the first time I got traded, my wife, my son, my oldest Jack, he's 17 now. So he would have been like one and a half. My wife was pregnant. And the second time I got traded, I had, you know, a 2.5-year-old and a 1-year-old, basically. So they weren't in school. They could travel with us. So that was, you know, I was extremely fortunate that I didn't have kids in school and really have to leave them. The other side of that is learning a whole new city, whole new coaching staff, new fans, new media members, all that stuff. It's a whirlwind. And I think a lot of guys struggle. I mean, you see a lot of these mid-season trades, and a lot of guys just play awful because there's so much change. And we are men of routine. We play 162 games in 180 days. We are men of routine. Whether you're a first baseman or a relief pitcher, like, you're going out there every single day between, you know, 2 p.m. and 11 p.m. with the same routine basically every day. When that changes, it can be tough. For me, I took it as, man, I've got all this other stuff going on. I'm going to lock in even more. So I actually played really well because I didn't have an opportunity for my mind to start floating in other places, because I had to make sure that I went in the right tunnel to, you know, to get to the ballpark. I had to make sure I, you know, knew where I was going in the locker room and knew the names of people. So I was really focused on my job during, you know, that year and a half I played with Atlanta and Anaheim. And if you probably look at the best year and a half stretch of my career, it was those, you know, those times when I got traded, you know, just simply because I had no other option than to really focus on playing the game.
So, speaking as a guy who's gotten traded a couple of times and been designated and picked up on waivers by other teams, I can appreciate what you're saying right there. You know, that's a huge issue sometimes, you know, for guys coming into a new city like that. So, yeah, that really does, you know, make a difference when you're in a place where you're comfortable, but when you're not, you really have to create kind of a new normal.
No doubt. And our game is, I mean, the other thing to remember is it's a business. And so a lot of people take it personally when they get traded. I didn't take it personally. I mean, are you a little disappointed that your team doesn't want you anymore? Or, you know, I understand every time I got traded, it wasn't because I wasn't performing or because I wasn't a good fit on the team. It's because I was about to go to free agency and sign a huge contract. And I was with teams that weren't, you know, were rebuilding and weren't willing to pay that contract. But I totally got the business side of it. And, you know, there were no tears shed. There were, you know, there's this is our job. This is what we do for a living. And, you know, I took that plane seat to Atlanta and Anaheim whenever I had to do it, and I had a smile on my face.
So you mentioned that contract. I want to go there next, because you left Texas or got traded to Atlanta from Texas right after you turned down a pretty lucrative multi-year contract. I'm guessing that decision did not come easy. Can you talk about that a little bit and talk about maybe some considerations outside of money? Because a lot of times people might look at that and go, how in the world can you turn down that kind of money?
Yeah, you know, it's a little bit of a haze because you know, in the midst of it, you got your agent saying certain things, and your GM's kind of pulling you aside, and the owner wants you to come say hi to him. And meanwhile, I'm just trying to figure out how to get a hit off Scott Linebrink that night. You know what I mean? Like, I got a job to do. So, but I do remember I always wanted to stay with the Rangers and stay in Texas. I loved playing in Dallas. Loved the fans. And listen, my nickname is Tex. It just worked. It worked. You know, but when it came down to it, I knew the Rangers were in a rebuilding mode. I didn't want to have an albatross of a contract to where people are looking at me saying, well, we're paying you so much, so we can't go get that extra starting pitcher. We can't go get that left fielder that we need or whatever it might be. And then my agent, you know, sitting down with my agent saying, listen, this is how much you're leaving on the table. If you want to sign this contract, this is what I believe you're going to sign for in a year and a half. And it was a significant amount of money. And again, being a businessman, this is really the one shot that I had to cash in on free agency. At the end of the day, they still had to trade me, right? It was their decision to trade me, but turning down that contract, it wasn't that difficult of a decision.
Yeah, you make a good point there. I mean, there's a lot of considerations there for family, for the city that you live in. Is this the right team situation? So as a man of faith, too, I know we talk about wanting to be a good steward. So that has a lot to do with it as well, which I want to ask you about now, because I know that you're a man of faith. You've alluded to that already. Can you talk a little bit about your faith story and what that journey's been like for you?
Yeah, so I grew up Catholic. My mom's older brother is a Catholic priest in Baltimore. He's still, I saw him about a month and a half ago. He's about, I think he's 76 years old and still going strong, you know. So I grew up in a house that knew God. We went to church every Sunday. I went to a Catholic, all boys Catholic high school. So I absolutely knew who God was, you know, when I was younger. That being said, man, I was still a young, immature, stupid kid for most of my childhood and even into my early 20s, right? I met my wife in college, who was a huge positive influence on me. She grew up Baptist. So you have a Catholic and a Baptist who met in college. And we decided that we're not going to have any decisions on what type of church we're going to go. We went to like every different church in Dallas-Fort Worth for 2 years, and we landed on a non-denominational church, right? So like you talk about the ultimate compromise. And it was when I started going to Irving Bible Church when I was probably 26 years old at the time, and my first son was born. So you have, you know, I kind of coasted through my faith as, hey, you know, I know God is, you know, I got baptized and I got my first communion and, you know, I got confirmed in the Catholic Church and I go to church on Sunday, so I'm good. But you realize that when you're 26, you have your first son and you really start getting into the Bible and try to figure out what that Bible's telling you. That's when I started my relationship with Jesus. It really started taking off in my mid 20s. And one of the things that being a father, you know, made me realize is how selfish I was. I was an extremely selfish person, you know, trying to build my pro career and, you know, do as much as I could, you know, on and off the field. And a baby shows up and you realize that it's not all about you anymore. You know, you're not number one with your wife. You're not number one. Even your parents, they like the grandbaby more than you when they come visit, you know? So it's a humbling experience. It's, you know, just one of the most beautiful experiences in the world. And, you know, if you question who God is and his love for you, have a child and you'll realize it. So I would say that's when I started trying to figure out who Jesus was. And I'm still to this day, 17 years later, as a 43-year-old man, I'm still trying to figure out who Jesus is and what he wants me to do. And it's a beautiful thing.
So in reading some news articles and things online before I did this interview, I got to learn a little bit more about you. And I wanted to ask you because there was a reference to a friend that you had in high school that actually passed away. And it talked about how impactful that experience was. Can you tell us about that and what you learned from his death?
Yeah. So summer before my senior year, we probably had about 12 guys that we did as much as we could together. You know, they didn't all play baseball, but it was, you know, 12 guys that we all went to the same high school and, you know, lived around each other. And, you know, every weekend we were hanging out, we were going over to each other's houses and you know, trying to get classes together in high school, and those were our best friends. And he was part of that group, and he passed away before our senior year. And that's tough when you're 16, 17 years old, and you think that you're going to live forever, and you think you're bulletproof. Died in a car accident, and you know, it really shook up our friends. It really shook up his family, obviously, and you know, still to this day. So this is 27 years later. You know, me and my friends, we still hang out. We still have a golf tournament to raise money for a scholarship in Nick's name. His name was Nick Liberatore. We're gonna go. You know, my buddies and I, we're gonna go on 11 guys on a ski trip in February, because you know, we have a brotherhood that really, you don't realize how important relationships are until you lose one. And as a Christian man, I just know how important my brothers are. And, you know, it's a little different when you're playing baseball, because it's a little bit more transactional, right? It's, and as we just talked about, you can be gone the next day, but when you have a group of brothers that you've been through so much together, and most of them know and love the Lord and are trying to be good fathers and husbands the same way that I am, you know, it's powerful to be able to share those experiences. And, you know, still think about Nick pretty much every day, and I got a picture of him on my counter in my closet, and just, you know, realize how much life he had to go, but hopefully he's in a better place. I know he's in a better place, and I'll see him again soon.
So I want to move into things that are important to you. And you've mentioned that scholarship fund that you set up. From what I can tell, education is something that's very important to you. You just went back to school recently to finish your degree from Georgia Tech. Talk about the value of education. What does that mean to you, and how do you hope to impress that upon your kids?
Well, I know how much education, how important it was for me. My mom was a school teacher. Both of my wife's parents were school teachers. And, you know, it's the equalizer, right? You know, it doesn't matter where you come from. If you can get a good education, there's a lot of things that you can do in this world. And so when my wife and I look at our philanthropic efforts, you know, it's the church and it's schools. And whether that's our kids' schools, whether that's Georgia Tech, where we went to college, whether it's, you know, scholarship funds in Maryland, you know, in Nick's name, we know what it's been able to do for people, and we're just super happy to be able to give back in that way. And it's tangible, right? You know, we work with charter schools in New York City. That was one of the cool things when I played for the Yankees, you know, raising a bunch of money and supporting charter schools with these kids from very poor backgrounds, get a chance to have a quality education and get out of the cycle of poverty. That's powerful stuff. And you know, my wife and I have always been really passionate about helping people with their education and making sure they have opportunities.
Yeah, let's talk some more about that, because obviously this is a big focus of this podcast, is what it means to serve others as ball players and as public figures. I'm sure you had plenty of opportunities to not just help raise money, but also awareness and donate some of your time and be a champion for different causes. Can you talk about maybe some of those causes and how you chose to involve yourself and your family?
Yeah, so just talked about that one in Harlem called Harlem RBI. It's now called Dream, and they have a bunch of charter schools, which I really love being a part of. You know, some of the other ones that I really enjoy are like the Police Athletic League, right? So almost all of your major cities have a Police Athletic League, and especially now in a polarizing time in our country, where you know, it's sad to see how police officers are treated sometimes. You know, I come from a military background. My father went to the Naval Academy. I have tons of family members that have served, you know, served in a way that I don't serve. You know, I've never had bullets fired at me, right? You know, I've never had to jump out of a perfectly good airplane or a perfectly good helicopter, you know, to go on a mission in the Middle East. And I have family members that have done that. And so, you know, when I look at organizations like the Police Athletic League or military organization, there's so many good ones that people like us that get blessed to have a job that is entertaining. You know, I got to entertain people for a living. You know, you got to do the same thing. It was pretty cool. It was fun. And our lives weren't in danger every day. I'm very passionate about giving back and supporting people and organizations that put their lives on the line for us.
So when you go out and you have these experiences, you know, we talked about the daily grind of a baseball player. We talk about the demands on your time, and certainly there's a lot of them, and I'm sure there still are today. But when you do kind of push some of that aside and say, hey, I'm going to give of myself in this way. I'm going to dedicate a half a day or an hour or whatever it may be. How does that make you feel when you're done with that?
You know, I don't really know if I'm serving well, to be quite frankly, just to be quite honest with you. I'm trying to figure out how God wants to use me right now. And so if I go to an event, if I go to a camp, if I go to, you know, one of the things I think we talked about, I don't have a lot of patience for coaching. That's what I know that about myself. So I would rather talk to the parents that are watching the little kids play or watching the coach at practice and mentor the parents than actually get on the field and coach. But is that what God wants me to do? I mean, I don't know. Hopefully it is. Hopefully I'm serving well. That being said, when I see results, you know, when a parent will text me or call me and say, hey man, I just want to let you know, I really appreciate what you said about XYZ, or I really appreciate you supporting me through this issue. That feels good, because, you know, we're all called to disciple, and, you know, we're all called to serve God. I know I'm not doing enough. I know I'm not far, far, far from perfect. You know, I'm just a broken man trying to follow Jesus and know him better. That being said, I've really enjoyed moving back here to Texas and getting plugged in with Austin Ridge. And my kids go to Regent School of Austin, which is a great Christian school in town. There's way more opportunities to serve just in daily life. You know, you don't have to go online and sign up for whatever to go serve. It's just, you know, every single day you're going to meet somebody. There's an opportunity to love on them, or, you know, there's an opportunity to host a bunch of kids. I took, you know, my oldest son and his two buddies to the UT football game on Sunday or on Saturday. Just that, you know, those 5 or 6 hours with those boys, man, was just awesome. And I hope when they get older, you know, they can look back at their childhood and go, you know what, I had some really good, strong Christian men around me growing up, and it made a difference in my life.
Mark, I really appreciate your openness, your authenticity with regards to that question. I too have wondered the same things, you know, sometimes post baseball. I mean, our baseball careers are so clearly defined in what success and failure looks like. And every night we can come away knowing, hey, I either did my job or I didn't do my job. Or if I didn't do my job, what do I need to do to make sure I do it tomorrow? And sometimes that's not as easy to define after the game. And I think, you know, sometimes I have to ask those questions too. Like, am I really doing what I'm supposed to be doing? But I want to, you know, just remind folks of the words that you spoke earlier, that I'm just looking for Jesus every day. And I think if we really take that open-handed approach and say, God, where would you have me serve? And if we're really willing to maybe go to the places that God's going to show us, I think he will present opportunities for us.
There's no doubt. And I'm glad you said that, Scott, because we had maybe the most black and white definition of success and failure of any job you could ever have, right? Sports is the ultimate meritocracy. You play well, you win. You play poorly, you lose. And it's like, you know, your stats are up there every single day. I mean, every at bat, after every pitch, your stats get reloaded, right? And there was comfort in that. You know, there was comfort in knowing I got up every single day and I knew what my job was. At the end of the day, I could say, did I succeed or did I fail? Now that I've been retired for 7 years now, I realize why some people struggle post playing days. And especially in a game like baseball, where you're playing it every single day. And we didn't have a life outside of the ballpark for 8 months out of the year, you know? Without Jesus, without my, you know, the rock and centering on my Christian faith, I'd probably be lost. And sometimes I still feel lost, right? You know, 'cause I'm like, exactly what do you want me to do, God? And, you know, I could do this or I could do that. And, you know, we have so much flexibility, you kind of float around a little bit. And it, if it's if it's not, if you're not rooted in your family and your faith as an ex-ball player, it's really easy to go get into stuff that aren't positive, that you know aren't helping your relationships, that aren't helping your physical and emotional and mental strength. And so I've just been so blessed to have a family that loves me and a ton of great Christian brothers around me that can encourage me. And you know, when I have a Bible study, we have Bible study every Friday morning. And sometimes I'm like, hey guys, just pray that God opens a door for me, you know, this week or month or year, because I'm looking for a way to serve. I'm looking for some direction right now, because I can't go back and play baseball. No one's signing a 43-year-old that hadn't played and haven't swung a bat in 7 years, right? So every day you get up and you try to figure out, all right, God, what do you want me to do?
I want to close with this, because you and I had some good banter back and forth before we hit record, and you were talking a little bit about some of the issues that we face, even as someone from the outside looking in might say, you know, Mark, what problems could you possibly have? You had this 14-year career, you've won a World Series, you know, you've got all the money that you need. But you were speaking very clearly about contentment, and I would love for you to maybe just offer folks some wisdom and insights into somebody who maybe others look at and say, what problems could he have with contentment?
Yeah, I've struggled with contentment my entire life, and probably more as I've gotten older, because the more the world tells you this is what you need to be content, the more you're saying, well, that's not making me happy. You know, all-star games or trophies or World Series and, you know, all that type of stuff, that has never made me content. It's made me appreciate the work that I put in for my job. It's made me happy that God blessed me to be able to play baseball. But you know, every single day I've got three teenagers, I've got a wife, I've got tons of family and friends that are going through physical stuff. I mean, listen, we're at a point in our lives that every day or week, it seems we're getting a call or an email from somebody. Hey, did you hear so-and-so's father passed away? Did you hear so-and-so has cancer? Your so-and-so has this disease. I mean, this is life. And whether you're a Hall of Famer or, you know, have a job at the, you know, security personnel at the ballpark, every one of those people have the exact same issues going on. And if you don't rely on God, if you don't rely on that relationship with Jesus, you're going to feel like it's just all closing in on you. And, you know, I can't take out my World Series ring and tell my kids to listen to me when we're having an argument, right? Like that, it doesn't work that way. So I would just encourage people that no matter what season of life you're in, no matter what your job status, your relationship status, whatever it might be, the world's telling you that these things will make you content, but it's Jesus. You know, our lead pastor at Austin Ridge, Brad Thomas, says all the time, it's Jesus plus nothing. That is it. Jesus plus, not Jesus plus a good job or Jesus plus stature in your community. It's Jesus plus nothing. And that's how I try to live my life. And I would just encourage people to lean on Jesus every step of the way.
Amen. Well said. Mark, I really appreciate your time. I appreciate your thoughts with us today on serving and faith. And hopefully this has been an encouragement to a lot of people.
Thank you, Scott. God bless you, man. I love what you're doing. And, you know, I'll come on anytime, man. This was fun.
And many thanks to Mark Teixeira, three-time MLB All-Star World Series champion, for joining Scott Linebrink on the Get in the Game podcast. And of course, we brought that to you here on the Sports Spectrum podcast. Every so often, we want to bring to you the conversations that are happening on our podcast network, on other shows, and bring them to you right here so that you don't miss them. Because you might have missed Scott Linebrink on the Get in the Game podcast, talking to Mark Teixeira. Well, here it is on the Sports Spectrum podcast. So we hope you enjoyed that conversation. It's really a great time of year for baseball, right? The playoffs are right around the corner. This is the perfect time to listen to this conversation and share it with that baseball-loving fan in your life. Maybe you got a New York Yankees fan in your life. You can share this conversation with them, and maybe it plants a seed to share the gospel, to share Jesus with someone that you love. And that's what we're about here at Sports Spectrum, just continuing to bring these conversations to you, that we keep Jesus in the sports world, in the sports conversation, That's what Sports Spectrum has been about for almost 40 years, 38 years with Sports Spectrum. You can find all of our content at sportsspectrum.com. You can subscribe to our magazine. You can get our 10-day daily devotional. You can subscribe to our Sports Spectrum newsletter. You can read all of our content for free on the website, articles, devotionals, and of course, the Sports Spectrum Podcast Network, found over at sportsspectrum.com. Thanks again for tuning in. We hope you guys will join us next time for a brand new conversation here on the Sports Spectrum Podcast. I hope you all have a great rest of your day, and we'll see you soon.